Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. Still can't follow me on Twitter. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, we are streaming live on the Odyssey app, where you can even listen to us on demand. You can also stream us on the iHeartRadio app, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. Well, as always, thank, of course, our veterans, with it being Veterans Day today. Thank you to all, basically, who do what none of us really have the courage to do. So we thank you, and I know also, I want to thank your families. Having grown up the daughter of a career military person, it's obviously tough on them. They make sacrifices oftentimes moving around, but want to thank also all who have served and wish you all a happy Veterans Day. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
My company, as he is each and every Tuesday on the program, he is the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, as well as the VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate Show, airing Saturdays at 8 a.m. Central Time. Check your local listings. You can also catch him as the host of VSiN Primetime. Download the VSiN Watch app on the Everything app at 1 Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Howdy, howdy.
How we feeling?
I'm feeling all right. Yeah, I do a show in Milwaukee. They weren't too happy today after whatever that was last night on Monday Night Football. And but I'm good, man. Had, you know, best week I've had all college football season, so that was good. And now we got a new batch of rankings for everyone to get mad at. I just want to know.
Well, hold on. I want to stop you there.
Yeah.
If you had a great weekend,
yeah,
and you've infiltrated my brain, and I had a horrific weekend, that means you laid some points.
You want me to run through my card real quick?
Yes, I do.
Wake Forest.
Okay. Yeah, you did. You did mention you were getting the UVA scalp.
Texas Tech. I did lay there.
Yep.
UConn.
Okay.
Temple.
Yep.
Auburn was a push. I bought to 7.
Oh, congratulations! That makes one of us.
Hawaii.
Yep. Yeah.
Kentucky.
You laid points. That's not like you.
No, they were 3.5-point dog to Florida.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah. It was the shockingly low line. Yeah.
Yeah. So those were, some of them. And then I had smaller plays. I had a little bit on Wisconsin that won. I had a little bit on, Iowa first half, which died, with a 48-yard field goal in the rain. They obviously covered full game, and I did have some LSU plus 10 and they lost by 11.
Mm-hmm.
So that one didn't come home. But the podcast plays were good, and it felt good to have a good week, finally.
That makes one of us.
So what did you do? What did you have?
Let's see.
Did you fall for Mississippi State?
Nope.
Okay.
I did not fall for that. I fell for Missouri.
All right. A lot of people I respected were on Missouri in that game. I just couldn't get there with the backup quarterback.
I did the move of, I just was like, it's so obvious. I don't know. To me, it's like I watched him play against Vandy, and I even talked it out on the show about how oftentimes you'll see a guy come in, and when he's just thrown into the fire, he can do okay. But then there's the whole 2 weeks of, oh, my God, I'm the starting quarterback, and Elko's defense just had him. That was one of those ones where he just ripped it up. I had a fleeting moment of hope. They got it to 21-7, and they got a stop. And then when A&M ran the fake punt, it was over. Like, you just knew, like, you just started doing the math. I fell for that. I did not buy the point with Auburn, so that was a loser.
I lost that game in both of my contest cards. Yeah, that one sucked.
I was not thrilled when they went when Vandy went for it. I understood why. Like, their kicker has good stats, but every time he's kind of had a pressure kick, it's not exactly been great. I got what they were doing, and they were making sure that they could try to win the game, but that was one where you're like, please God, kick it. Please God, kick it. And then when Auburn won the coin toss in overtime and you realized Vandy was going to walk it into the end zone and score, you're like, well, that's
the way it always works.
Yeah, so I had that. I fell for the BYU trap, and honestly, of all the dumb ones, that's the one I felt the least about because my thought process was I thought BYU's defense would do enough to keep them in the game.
Sort of did.
And they did. Honestly, like, I do think that's an interesting thing about Texas Tech. Their defense is legit. There's nothing fraudulent about that. But given the fact that Morton has a broken leg and he's still playing, they still leave a lot to be desired offensively.
That defense is
it's so good,
the
man.
Real deal, man.
I mean, and it was
when they play a big, big boy in the playoff,
they're going to look the part. They're certainly going to look the part. Let's see. It fell for. Oh, I had Memphis on that. That was when I saw Retzlaff in the first half. I was like, okay, I know how this is going. And then there was another game where I got screwed by – I had another overtime loser.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than overtime losers.
Just when you're going to.
I did get a – you know, it's funny because I always on Monday or Sunday, depending on, you know, what my schedule's like, I go through the SP Plus post-game win expectancy just to kind of make sure I hate myself even more about the bets that I lost.
Smart.
Usually when I bet on Arkansas and they have like a 77% post-game win expectancy and lose.
You're going to be on them again this weekend.
I'm betting them again this week. Yeah. Woo pig suey. Come on now. Now you're catching points. Come on, baby. But I had, did you happen to watch Temple Army?
So I did.
End of this game. So by the way, Army's post-game win expectancy, I think was like 19% and Temple lost 14-13. I don't know if you discussed this at all yesterday. It wasn't on bad beats because I thought Temple was the right side, but my God, I thought about sending a thank you note to Jeff Munkin and the Army Black Knights because this end of the game was so excruciating. So
I've got Temple, the notes if you want it. You read it?
Temple punts the ball back with 9 minutes and 53 seconds to go. Jeffrey, would you like to tell the people what Army did with that 9 minute and 53 seconds left on the game clock?
The fine young men of West Point
went on
an 18-play drive, all runs. They did not put the ball in the air once. They got down to the Temple 3, took a knee, and ran out the clock.
So here's the crazy thing about it. So watching this game live, I'm going, I've got 7, and I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to score a touchdown. They're going to win by 8. This is going to be so painful. And I'm thinking, I'm doing the math in my head, which is always a dangerous game. You're like, wait, I think they can get a first down and run the clock out.
Yeah, when you're doing clock rules.
So
I did that. I did that in Georgia-Auburn, and that didn't work out.
They got a first down. I think it was – okay, here's what it was. It was 2nd and 5 from the Temple 8. Quarterback runs, has a – their Temple's letting them score, right? Because
yes,
Temple –
they're trying to get the ball back.
They need the ball back, right? They want it to be an 8-point game. So the quarterback slides.
Oh, no. I think we lost him. There you are. You're back.
Anticipation. And he sneaks. And Temple, I think, is trying to pull him into the end zone.
Yep.
And he just kind of barrel rolls down onto the ground, and then you're able to knee it out. So that was excruciating. I think I was the right side, but regardless, the Black Knights did what we needed them to do to get the cover there in West Point.
All right, so we'll start with the big questions that we have. Then we'll get into our college football awards. We'll get into the list during hour number 2. Nico finally fired. I also I'll get into playoff expansion. We also have the home team is road dogs tonight. We got the Grizzlies up at Madison Square Garden taking on the Knicks, and then the Tigers head down about 60 miles south to take on Ole Miss tonight as we've got our first look at the Tigers over the weekend, which honestly kind of ended up being a pleasant surprise. Vibes weren't great to start the season, but a relatively good solid win against San Francisco and a game that they largely controlled. Okay, so I think here's where I want to start. How many true national title contenders do you think we have right now?
Okay. Ohio State.
Yep.
End of list. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I think that is a question, right? Because I don't know. I'm willing to accept the fact that if we would see Ohio State get some game pressure, maybe that they're in a spot that they haven't been really since, honestly, the first quarter of the Texas game. Like, I'm open to that idea. With that said, it's just like, it's kind of the same way I feel about Julian Sain. I understand that Julian is throwing to NFL receivers all over the place, but I do not understand how people can watch him play and not be impressed. Does that mean he should win the Heisman? No, I'm just talking about
in terms
of quarterback
play. I think he should win the Heisman
play
right now. Like, you know, Bill Conley made a really good point in his column this week. He goes, here, let me find it. He goes, if I had a Heisman vote, I'm going to go with the guy who simply torched Penn State from the beginning, not the guy who needed the late heroics. Talking about Fernando Mendoza, right? And this is not a knock on Fernando Mendoza, but we're talking about the best player in college football. And I think because Julian Sain has an elite wide receiver in Jeremiah Smith, a very good, maybe elite wide receiver in Carnell Tate, people don't give him necessarily the credit that he deserves. Right now, it's kind of a pick 'em, essentially, between those two. And, you know, a little bit further down is Ty Simpson. But if you look at some of the numbers, man, like Julian Sain, here it is. Number one in QBR, number one in passer rating, number one in completion percentage, number one in PFF's pass grade and offensive grade, and number two in the country in yards per attempt, only behind CJ Carr. The dude's been fantastic, and I haven't given him his due until maybe a week or two ago. So, yeah, I think Ohio State is the best team, but I don't think they're untouchable
this year. And this is where my wife has to be the recipient of the fact that I don't have the Everything app right now. Like, whatever I would tweet, I just say right to her. And we ran toss sweep with our daughter to my in-laws this weekend.
Nice.
And I had the Ohio State game on a side TV, and I was literally just saying, like, I do not understand how people don't think this kid is good, and they think he's just like a product of who he's playing with. And that was the exact moment he threw the deep post pattern. He threw the deep post pattern right over the top, and it was like he could not have handed it off any better. And it was like a 50-yard dart, and I was like, nothing further, Your Honor.
So back to your initial question, who can win the national title? Ohio State, Alabama, A&M. I think Indiana. I don't know.
I'm willing to give Indiana a little benefit of the doubt on Saturday, because
that's a hard spot. And like,
and
you can make
Surratt,
all the jokes you want.
No Surratt. That team was that Penn State team is still talented enough. I mean, we did rank them preseason number one or number two, whatever it was.
Look, that was the Super Bowl for them, right? They were, you know, the season's been a waste. They're at home. They're facing the number two team in the country. It's big noon kickoff. It was a really good spot, and I was kicking myself for not betting Penn State. I had some people that did ultimately get on Penn State plus the points there. I think this Notre Dame team's capable of it. I think they have flaws, no doubt. But I think offensively, they're better than they were last year. Defensively, they're not. But I think if CJ Carr keeps progressing like he is, I mean, people who make power ratings love this Notre Dame team. And I think Notre Dame has the upside of winning the title. I do have questions about their defense. We saw how bad it looked against A&M at home. But you think back to that A&M game, and they drop a extra point snap. They get screwed by the refs on a 4th-and-11 on the touchdown, game-winning touchdown. Like, that was right there in their hands. I don't know about Georgia. I'd have to be talked in there, because I just don't think the defense is is just vintage Georgia. And maybe that's me expecting too much out of Georgia teams that have won the title before. But I just have questions about Georgia and that defense. But what I will say, and why I probably would still put Georgia on the list, Jeffrey, is, you know, they kind of keep answering the bell. And, you know, we'll find out more about them this weekend when they play Texas. But, you know, beating Ole Miss in the way that they did was impressive to me. I know they lost to Alabama, but you look at some of the inside the metrics there, they outgained Alabama in that game. They really dominated the second half, just couldn't get there ultimately on the final score. They didn't outgain them. I thought they did, but they did not actually. They got outgained by 40 yards. So
I think it was that last drive, I think, put them over the edge.
I think that's where I'm at. I'm just not there on Oregon, even though that was a really impressive and gutsy win on Saturday at Iowa. Texas Tech, I think to your point about the offense, I have got questions. And then I think the question is Ole Miss. Do you think Ole Miss is good enough to win the national title? I would listen to a discussion about Ole Miss.
I think they're good enough to win a game, if not two games. I do not think they could win four games in a row. I think eventually they run up against a team that can. Their problem is going to be, like, when they go up against mediocre or even, like, mediocre plus defense or offenses, they can do pretty well. But when they go up against a really good offense, like, they have some problems.
Well, we saw that against Georgia, right?
Yeah.
So what's your list?
All right, so Ohio State, I'm including Indiana.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm going Texas A&M. Bama, Georgia, asterisk on Texas. I think Texas Tech, I don't think this is fraudulent. You know what I mean?
I think their defense
keeps them in most games. And you have the weird stat with when Baron Morton plays, they've won every game by 20 points or more. I think the bigger problem that I have with Texas Tech is, okay, if we really do believe that BYU has kind of been playing, you know, playing with it the whole time, who have they played that is a caliber of a team that we're talking about? And then I think the other question is, I started playing around with ACC standings. I think what they need is, I think you need Clemson to win this week. There's like, I started working out. There's a scenario where Miami gets in as their second team and plays Duke in the title game. I think that's what they need, and they need Miami to be the title team.
Who's this?
The ACC. Because I think that is the only team that, if they play their best, even belongs on the field with the other teams we're talking about. They obviously don't play their best, and their coach can mismanage a game better than anyone in the nation. But in terms of pure talent, I think they could.
Miami's the best team in the ACC.
But,
and I know they have two losses. They're the best team in the ACC.
So I started playing around. It's like if you need.
I'm trying to find it. There's a website that.
Yeah, it's called bball.notnothingoneword.net.
Yep, got it right here. Oh, wait, hold on. Yeah, it is. It is a website that you can waste a lot of time on there. But yeah, I think there's an opportunity for the ACC to, if Clemson wins this weekend, and let me just calculate that.
So you need need Georgia Tech to lose to Pitt. You need Georgia Tech to take a second loss, and even though you would lose the head to head, there's enough of a two-loss jumble that head-to-head doesn't apply. And then you need Clemson to beat Louisville, and then obviously they have to win out. And then you need SMU
to lose.
You need SMU to lose. Let's see. Where's
they got? I mean, they got Louisville. So you need Louisville to beat SMU, which is possible. Clemson to beat Louisville.
Yeah, that's it. So what you would need is Clemson to beat Louisville this week. Then you need Pitt to beat Georgia Tech next week. You would also need Louisville to beat SMU next week. And then you would need, I think it's you need Wake to beat Duke. And that gets you there. because that gets you to Duke at 6-2, Miami at 6-2, Tech at 6-2, UVA at 6-2, SMU at 6-2, Pitt at 6-2. And the way that it basically works out is that amongst the teams that would be in play, Miami would have the second best record.
Yeah, there's a lot that needs to happen. There's a lot, but it's the ACC. You never know. I mean, it certainly could play out. I mean, look, there was obviously this past week a lot of columns and a lot of airspace was utilized on why Miami should be ahead of Notre Dame. And I am hopeful that all of these people in this medium spend that time when Louisville pops up behind Miami tonight.
I'll say this. I think your algorithm's getting you. I didn't see a lot of the columns. In fact, most of the people that I think kind of know what's going on.
My guy, look, and he's a buddy of mine, and I respect what he does. Ari Wasserman was out for blood, man. That dude was, he was out there. And look, if you want to make the case, and I heard Bud Elliott mention on his podcast too, if you want to make the case, I'll listen to it. They did play a game. I agree games have to matter, but the irony is going to be that Louisville went to Miami and beat Miami, and they're going to be ranked behind Miami tonight, and they both have two losses.
Yeah. I think that's probably how it's going to go.
And it is what it is, right? And like, Louisville can't lose at home to Cal, right? You can't lose that game. And Miami shouldn't go on the road and, you know, try and lose to SMU, even though the SMU loss looks a little bit better.
Yeah, but you blew like a 2-score lead. Like, yeah, they worked very, very hard to lose that game. All right, so this is kind of where I'm at. All right, are you in agreement? Right now, three Big Ten teams, correct? Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon?
As of right now, yes.
Okay.
And I think I'll say this. I am confident that three Big Ten teams will make the playoff.
I think I'm confident. I think that Washington loss this weekend set up a scenario to where it could start to get iffy. Like, I think you're right that SC could probably take that third one. So, yeah, I think you're probably right. All right. Are we good with five SEC teams right now? A&M, yes. Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas. So the outside looking in would be Oklahoma and Vandy. I'll get back to that. Do we think there is a scenario where the Big 12 could get two teams? Because this is where
I think it's high.
This is where
here's
if BYU wins a close one in the title, if BYU gets the rematch and wins a barn burner,
or if Utah makes it to the Big 12 championship game, which is unlikely because they don't have the head-to-head tiebreak with BYU, because the committee really likes Utah. Right, they put them at 13.
Yes, there's no question.
So the committee is high on Utah. And if you're looking at that, so Utah's remaining schedule is Kansas State and Kansas. So they'll be a significant favorite, and Baylor this weekend. So they'll be a favorite in all three of these games.
I have a theory that the committee only watches Utah at home.
So let me see if I do this. So if it's this, oh, interesting. How about this?
All right.
It's not that complicated. According to our gospel, bball.nothing.net.
Of course.
If BYU loses at Cincinnati,
yep,
Utah is going to get in over BYU because there's going to be a multi-tie for second place, which would include Cincinnati. Utah beat Cincinnati. So based off of the website, Utah would get in because Arizona State, BYU, and Cincinnati would have a better combined winning percentage. I guess. I don't know what the hell that means. But I think there's a way that Utah-Texas Tech sets up, and if Utah gets a win there, I think they're both in.
Okay, so let's hold that out, because this is where I think we start to get into basketball territory. Like, what are the repercussions of bid thieves? Do we envision any way, realistically, that the ACC is getting multiple teams?
Yes, if Georgia Tech beats Georgia and then loses in the big ACC championship game, I think there's a bid thief. I think if Georgia Tech goes 11-1 and beats Georgia and loses the ACC championship to
Duke,
yikes. Does 11-2 Georgia Tech get in with a win over Georgia? I think they do.
The only question I have is, would it matter what happens to Georgia this weekend? Like, let's say if Texas beats Georgia and Georgia loses to Georgia Tech, we're now talking about 9-3 Georgia. Georgia's probably out at that point. Does that still propel Tech?
Yeah.
Because this is kind of where I'm looking at. It's like, all right, right now it's fairly clean if you do, all right, three Big Ten teams, five SEC teams, whoever it winds up being, and then a Big 12 team, an ACC team, G6 winner, and Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
The questions, though, that I have is, okay, what happens if we get into this situation where Oklahoma goes to Tuscaloosa and wins? We now have 10-2 Oklahoma, and let's say Texas splits the last two. So Texas is 9-3, but they have the win over Oklahoma. What do they do?
All right, repeat that scenario.
All right, let's say Oklahoma goes to Bama and wins, and then I think Oklahoma's other remaining game is LSU. I don't think there's another remaining. I think that's it.
Oklahoma's in.
Well, hold on, George.
They play Missouri.
Missouri. Okay. So let's say OU runs the table and goes 10-2.
Okay, they're in.
All right. Bama would then be 10-2.
They're in.
Okay. And let's say Texas.
Ole Miss, well, who then? I don't know who makes the SEC championship, but continue.
I can do it. I think it would be A&M and possible. So then, God.
It would still be A&M and Bama, according if everything else holds, which is unlikely. But if Oklahoma beats Bama, it still would be A&M. What if Texas beats A&M? Then it would be Bama, Georgia, and A&M would be out.
Yeah, this is kind of where, like, I wonder where it starts to get messy, because it's like...
Well, Texas makes this thing messy.
Right, because...
What if Texas beats Georgia and loses to A&M or
that's what I'm
versa?
Saying. Like, what if there's... What if 9-3 Texas is sitting there... Let's say this. What if, let's say Oklahoma doesn't win in Tuscaloosa. That's fine. But let's say Vandy wins at beats Kentucky at home and then wins at Tennessee, and they're 10-2, and Texas is at 9-3. What do they do? Texas has a head-to-head win. On paper, it finishes a three-point game.
Mm-hmm.
They have the additional loss, but largely the additional loss is because they went to go play at Ohio State.
I think Texas at 9-3 is getting in.
I think Vandy's in a bad spot.
I think Vandy's in trouble.
I said this last week that I thought actually
them coming in at 16 was bad.
I think there were a lot of people that focused on the ACC or, you know, had Notre Dame blinders on just to get into Tim's mentions and to get him riled up. And everybody was just focused on that. I actually thought the biggest takeaway from last week was I don't feel good about the Doors. Because being at 16, even though they had two losses, they separated the other SEC two-loss teams with that pack of ACC teams that I think had one loss, clarifying to me that they had them in a different tier. And then the bigger issue is going to be, even though we can watch that game last week and know that that was a good win at home against Auburn, a fired up Auburn team, you're going to get Kentucky and you're getting Tennessee. Even though winning at Neyland Stadium would be a great win, that would then be an 8-4 Tennessee team. I don't know how you can like lift yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's far from clean here with this whole situation, because we're going to get some weirdness. And that's the thing, too, is like everyone just assumes chalk holds. And this past weekend was a bit of a reminder. Hey, man, this thing ain't going to be that clean, right? You see Louisville lose as a massive favorite. You see Virginia lose. Good. Get out of here.
Well, I think the question I have, though, is we saw more or less chalk hold in the big boy leagues.
Correct.
In the leagues that Correct. We don't really think that there's that much separation between these teams, yeah, things got weird. Now, this is also the time last year.
But we also saw Indiana as a 2-touchdown favorite almost lose at Penn State. Iowa, should have, but almost beat Oregon. Like, there was a lot going on there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also willing to say like that was extreme weather. Like there was no more perfect scene in college football than 2:30 in Iowa City driving rainstorm. It's like this is how God intended football to be at Iowa City.
Look, things could get weird here soon in the Big Ten, right? Because Iowa goes to USC, USC then goes to Oregon, and then Oregon goes to Washington. And I get it, Washington looked horrific on the road against Wisconsin. They're a different team at home.
Well, it was like, also another weather game. And then furthermore, we don't know the exact status of these injuries because Oregon's going to start lying, but Oregon had about half their offense get hurt.
Yeah, there's a real chance that things could get a little weird in the Big Ten for sure.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into our weekly awards. We'll talk about the week that was. We'll hand out the awards next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up this Friday, television, radio, and newspaper outlets from all across the Mid-South are joining forces for a day of giving to support the Mid-South Food Bank. Together, we're accepting donations and raising critical funds to help feed families right here at home. All you have to do is go to the website, 929ESPN.com, to donate, or you can join us Friday at the corner of Poplar and Highland from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. to make your donations in person. Because when Memphis comes together, we can make a difference. All right, Tim, let's get into our weekly awards. Who was your team of the week?
Ooh, man. You know, I had my Heisman ready to go. Team of the week, I will give it to Texas Tech. Biggest game they had since the Michael Crabtree game in 2008, and they delivered. And I think, as we discussed earlier, kind of showed the world we're the real deal. Yes, we lost to Arizona State. Our quarterback wasn't playing. Look, and you said it too. The offense was frustrating at times early in that game, but the defense was so dominant that, to me, I think they emerged as a legit title-contending team. So I'll give them my team of the week.
Yeah, I have no problem with that because I was being a little nitpicky as we're talking about in terms of the best the best. It felt exactly like when you would watch an Alabama team in the first iteration of Saban, when they would just you were down 16-0 and you knew it was over. Like, there was just, there was no chance of coming back. And so, like, I want to give them full marks that the defense is absolutely legitimate. It's just, I do wonder if they get into a game where they can't just, you know, essentially zone up in the back end and have their front just get after everybody. Are they going to run into problems if they have to go and score themselves? Because they left, like, that was the one thing that kind of gave me a little hope for BYU going into the break. The fact that they didn't, the fact that it like went to the half at 13-0, you're like, man, all they need is like one gimmick play here and they can be back in it. But no, they, I have no problem with that. I actually, I'm going with Oregon. And the reason why I'm going with Oregon is
no problem with that either.
When you go on the road and you get Iowa, it's an experience. Like, I think you can now say Oregon's a Big Ten team because you had the horrible weather. You're losing every receiver that you possibly could imagine not losing. You lose offensive tackle, and then you get into the game where you've controlled most of it, but all of a sudden you look up with like a minute 45, and you're down. And the throw that Dante Moore made to set up the field goal was, I mean, that was an absolute dime in terms of ball placement. Like, yeah, it's one-on-one to the outside, but he threw an absolute laser in horrible conditions. Kicker goes up, like, just doesn't even break a sweat. Even after kind of getting iced, not only by his own team, but then by Iowa, just drills it. Like, I just thought that was a gutty, gritty win. And that's kind of the thing that we haven't really seen Oregon have to do. And I to me, it was like the same reason why I was, you know, we've learned that the Penn State win wasn't all it should have been. But it's the same type of thing where we are constantly seeing teams with these horrific travel schedules that can't handle it, and they found a way to get out of there with a win.
Can I give you an honorable mention?
Absolutely.
I mean, probably people in Memphis, Tennessee don't give two craps about what's happening in New England. What Jim Mora Jr. has done with this UConn program is not getting enough recognition. Like, this is a program that they essentially said, we don't care about. We're not going to be in a conference. We're leaving the American because all that matters is basketball. And they're probably right because they've won national championships for both the women and the men since going back to the Big East. But what Jim Mora Jr. has done with this program to get them to 7-3 with wins now over Boston College and a pretty good Duke team, they've got a quarterback whose touchdown interception ratio is 25-0. Like, they've got actual dudes on this team. Now, they'll probably lose to Air Force this week because that's the way football works out. But they're a fun team to watch. They don't play a lick of defense, but they're really good offensively. And they had like a side-by-side shot of like 2018 to 2025 this past weekend. I mean, they almost packed the house on Saturday. It was a pretty good scene. So honorable mention to UConn, who I think won their Super Bowl on Saturday, beating Duke 37-34. And boys and girls, when the bowl schedule comes out, auto bet UConn.
Oh, yeah. Look for the alt lines, everything.
All in on it. And their quarterback, I think, is in his like ninth year of college football. So he's definitely playing in that game.
So I have one honorable mention as well. Akron. So I'm not giving them credit for beating UMass, but remember when we were laughing at the NCAA slapping them with the postseason ban? Yeah. And we're like, well, that's the least significant postseason ban of all time because historically Akron and Kent State are two of the worst jobs you could possibly have. Well, thanks to a win against Western Michigan and then a win against Buffalo earlier this year, they now have Kent State and they have 3-7 Bowling Green. That team could be 6-6 and actually get left out of a bowl game because of something we are pretending like still matters, and that's APR scores.
Yeah, Joe Moorhead, who I think everybody just said will get fired this year because it's just inevitability. If he gets his team to 6-6, that's pretty impressive. And speaking of them, I believe it's the battle for the wagon wheel tonight on ESPNU against Kent State. First time since 2018 that Akron has been a favorite in back-to-back games against FBS opponents. They're a touchdown favorite tonight against Kent State.
All you had to do was get UMass into the MAC, and all of a sudden, endless possibilities. All right, you said you're ready to go. Who's your Heisman of the week?
I'm going to go a little off the radar. I'm going to give it to Jacob DeJesus. He is the speedy wide receiver for Cal in their upset win in overtime over Louisville. He scored the game-winning touchdown. He had 16 catches in the victory over Louisville as the Cal Golden Bears, who, I'll be honest, man, I kind of wrote off after their loss last week, but they went in there. You could give it to Sangapulateli as well, but Jacob DeJesus, 16 receptions, 158 yards, and a touchdown as the Cal Golden Bears continued the havoc-ridden ACC as they went in as 18.5-point underdogs and beat Louisville 29-26.
Yeah, that was tough. George and I have under Cal. That was a tough way to see it go.
Not great.
Yeah. It's okay.
The whispers that were coming out of the Cal coaching room, it sounded like the team had kind of checked out. So when I saw that score, because I didn't bet it, so I didn't really have it on one of the screens. I'm still trying to properly maneuver life without YouTube TV right now. But
if only you could have a satellite dish in Las Vegas.
I might have to at some point here.
Just saying.
In the near future.
You know what? I turn it on and it works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice.
It's been well over like 6 months since DirecTV's had a carriage dispute, too.
There you go. Got that going for
you.
Yeah. Who do you got?
I'm going with Jake Retzlaff. His first half against Memphis was about as good as I've seen a quarterback play all year. I mean, he ends up going 15 of 16 in the first half, and the one incompletion was a, like, in the breadbasket drop. He finishes 16 of 23, 332, three touchdowns. Ran for another 53 yards and a score against Memphis. It was one of those situations where you had to have your quarterback play big, and he played horribly against UTSA, and you had to have him on that night, and he absolutely delivered, and he keeps their playoff hopes alive.
He does, and the G5 continues just to be utterly wild with San Diego State. They were climbing up the odds board, and then they go out to the island and get smacked. Boise State lost their starting quarterback. They've got three losses on the year. They're pretty much out of it. James Madison's kind of lurking down there in the Sun Belt with one loss, so they could maybe sneak in. South Florida, when we get it tonight, I am highly confident that they will be the number 12 seed, and I think rightfully so, but you know, who's to say that Tulane doesn't beat them in the AAC championship game. So we'll see how it plays out. If we get there, I don't know the tie breaks and all of that, because
the most likely scenario right now is Tulane and USF. But obviously North Texas sitting there with one loss still leaves some doubt. But I believe Tulane, based on the tiebreaker procedures, Tulane would be in.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Tulane has FAU this weekend, Temple, and then they wrap up against Charlotte, so they will be a heavy favorite to win. And based off of that, I actually think there's a scenario. What is this scenario? Hold on. This could be. So East Carolina, if they beat Memphis this weekend,
they are still alive.
They could throw a wrench in this thing, and you could have a four-way tie for first.
Yeah, I think they do the thing, though. Their tiebreaker's like computer rankings, and Tulane will be ahead in computer rankings.
Okay, that makes sense.
It is, like, I had to read all of the AAC bylaws yesterday, or excuse me, the bylaws of the American, of course. I still think the most likely scenario is that, but again, there's still a lot to be played. Obviously, we could also go on with Diego, but of course, everyone knows that Diego just needs his own award, like, just the most Diego. 25 of 33, 377, three scores. Ran for 114, sack adjusted against Auburn, and a score. Okay, dumpster fire of the week. I'm going with Washington.
And here's
why. It's not just losing to a team that had 44 passing yards, most of which came from your backup punter. But it's also the Jed Fish's family hasn't moved. They don't like Seattle. Like, Fish is coming out having to, like, gripe about coaching rumors. It's just, I don't know, man. Just vibes right now, just bad.
All right, so Washington on the road was going to be mine, but I will pivot to Oregon State.
Yep.
Oregon State lost a game Saturday night on the CW to winless Sam Houston, a game in which they had a 10-0 lead after the first quarter. They outgained the Bearcats with a K, 474-157, had 20 more first downs, and lost the football game. I've never seen a box score like that where Sam Houston had two special teams touchdowns to give them their first win of the season, I believe, as 20.5-point underdogs.
It was also just, it just made me even more angry that they somehow beat Washington State.
10-7.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to say Louisville. Jeff Brohm is a favorite, just continues to can't do it. Great as an underdog, but.
Did I see he was trying to rip his offensive coordinator? I was like, Jeff, you call the plays. You're the offensive coordinator.
Isn't the offensive coordinator his son?
I don't know. I mean, he's obviously like mad at Miller Moss too. Like, I don't know. I just put for most college football moment of the week, the ACC, just in general. Like, you know, you think, hey, Georgia Tech's got a clear path. Look at this schedule. Show me the losses. Well, here's NC State never punting. Like, Louisville, 19-point favorites against Cal with whispers that things are bad behind the scenes. Loss. UVA gets its quarterback hurt, goes and loses to Wake or hosts Wake and loses. Like, everything about the ACC is just like just.
And a team with four losses could win that conference.
Correct.
In Duke.
A team that lost this weekend to UConn still has the clearest path to winning a conference championship and presumably a playoff berth.
My most college football moment, did you see that Lincoln Riley went full on Gordon Bombay on Friday night?
So are we talking about the fake jerseys?
It's a goalie! Yeah, they switched the jerseys. I actually didn't have a problem with this because it wasn't like they switched the jerseys on the sideline. He was actually listed on the flip sheet at number 80, Brock Heward's son, Sam Heward.
Brock's nephew.
Oh, nephew. I thought it was his son. My bad.
That's nephew.
My only issue with it, to be honest, was that they wasted on Northwestern.
So Pereira got on the call. It still should have been illegal. And not for the reason. It would have been illegal if they did on the flip card announce on the roster that, yes, Sam was wearing 80.
Can but you not replicate a you specialist
can't,
number?
You no. You can't have somebody go in and play the same position. And okay. Sam Johnson had already punted previously that night. You can't have somebody then wear number 80 and go in and punt again or in punt formation.
I don't know. It just reminded me of when they
gave, yes. I mean, come on, go on. We're talking about one of the greatest. Like
they gave Keenan Goldberg's jersey so he could shoot the knuckle puck in the third period against Iceland.
I like to think that.
Now that was illegal.
Adam Banks was actually my first exposure to somebody with Toradol. All of a sudden, Banks can't hold his stick, and then lo and behold, he shows up one day in the locker room. Guys, I'm good. Really?
The pain was
went away.
Charlie Conway couldn't play in the championship. Took one for the team.
And Charlie knew his role.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Good captain, though. Good captain.
Do you have a stock up?
I'll let you go first.
All right. I'm going with Big Ten back judge Josh Dasher.
Oh, he was awesome. How great was that?
This is the official. We spend so much time talking about officiating blunders. Let's give some shine to a guy who made arguably the best call I've seen all year. He had his eyes locked onto Omar Cooper's feet. Everybody that's watching thinks there's no way he's in bounds. Like the TV copy, you're like, he's out. He was right on the spot. He didn't get caught looking at anything else. His responsibilities, he checked them all, and he absolutely nailed the call.
Can I throw Gus Johnson into the belated dumpster fire there Oh, that call was... I mean, I feel bad. I've been there. You've done play-by-play.
Yep.
You're starting to feel your voice.
I had it bad last week. We had an outdoor playoff game, and it was like 50, and cold. Oh, it's disastrous. Like, I'm just like chewing halls.
It has nothing to do with him losing his voice. Hand him the Heisman Trophy now! Come on, dude. Like, I get it. You're in the moment. He did not play particularly well. The drive was fantastic by Mendoza. But Mendoza should not be handed the Heisman Trophy because they were 14-point underdogs and they beat Penn State on the road.
Yeah, I still, my whole thing is like, I don't particularly care because it feels like more than ever we have a reversion back to, remember when it just used to be like all the Heisman voters that only watch championship week? That kind of feels like what's going to happen.
Totally. I mean, it's what's going to happen.
Like,
I mean,
if him and San are underwhelming, then I think Ty Simpson gets into the SEC championship game. He's got a shot, but it's like, it feels like whoever plays better in the Big Ten championship game is winning the Heisman.
Can we say stock up for Miami? I think there's just enough scuttlebutt.
I think the only problem that I have with saying stock up for them is their situation has improved, but I don't know if they've improved.
No, I agree. And look,
but I agree with what you're saying. Their path that seemed last week when the ratings or the rankings came out that seemed almost impossible, it's now very much like in play.
And I think a question that was posed last week was if they end up getting close enough to Notre Dame and the end of the season, they put their team sheets together, is there a chance that Miami jumps over Notre Dame at any point? I'm not going to say no, because if South Florida wins the AAC, they're going to get into the playoff. That's a big win by Miami. They beat Notre Dame. And, I mean, Pitt, the problem about the Pitt game at the end of the season for Miami is this. If Notre Dame beats Pitt this weekend, and then Pitt follows up by losing to Georgia Tech, that win doesn't really look that strong at the end of the year for Miami. But I believe there's a pathway for Miami right now.
Well, I think even though that win may not look so strong, I think that's kind of what they need to perhaps get into the championship game and then have their way in. All right, stock down. Florida's on quit watch, by the way.
That was lovely from a betting standpoint. Oh, buddy.
Very much on quit watch. Mississippi State has so many injuries up front that the season is now taking its toll. And then just Garrett Nussmeier, NFL draft stock. He's the Dr. Pepper, the draft slide.
Are we going to see more from the Van Buren boys? Van Buren boy, Michael Van Buren, this weekend?
So my guess is yes, because it's not even necessarily like a pure A. I didn't realize this. Do you know Kelly and Nussmeier have the same agent?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, that's a fun tidbit.
How's that going right now?
Second,
things at LSU going well?
Yeah, we can get into that. I think that's not a good look for LSU.
No.
Yeah.
What'd they think? He was like, you fired the guy.
Yeah. No, he didn't. Well, then why is he not coaching?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver,
Available now wherever you get your podcasts.